Today on The Grave Talks, Demonic Forest, a conversation with DC O'Rourke. When you receive a message of hope for your future from a deceased grandfather at a very young age, it sparks an interest in the paranormal. At least it did for DC O'Rourke. In the years that would follow, he'd find himself being drawn to a patch of woods that one would call demonic, visiting time and time again trying to find answers. This would only be the start of his adventures and exploration into the paranormal. Today, he shares his story on The Grave Talks.
So we can definitely go back to my childhood. I was incredibly close with my mom's dad, my grandfather, while I was growing up. He was almost like a parent to me. And he ended up having a heart attack 2 days before my 13th birthday and passed away, which devastated me. Simply no words for it. But I remember shortly after this funeral, I awoke in a dream, but I could tell it was more than a dream, if that makes sense at all. Mm-hmm. I was in a very bright room. The walls were white. The light was practically blinding. And the room seemed like it went on forever. And here I am walking around in this room going, okay, why am I here? Because this is more than a dream. I could feel it. And all of a sudden I heard a voice call out to me at the very end of the room, and it sounded familiar. So I started walking toward it. And soon enough, I got to this person, and it turned out to be my grandfather, who was sitting on this, what I can only begin to describe as a throne of sorts. It was completely white. He was sitting upon it in a white suit, and he looked very youthful, a big smile on his face. And he said, come over here, I need to talk to you. And I went over and he said, look, I didn't get the chance to say goodbye. I just wanted you to know how much I love you, and I hope you have a good life. And he said, be good, which was something he always said to me. And 2 seconds later, I woke up feeling like I was still there, but I was back to reality within the comforts of my own bedroom. And I cried my eyes out about it, went and woke my mom up, told her. She said, you know, you're upset. Your grandfather died. Your mind's playing tricks on you. Go back to sleep. And I told anyone and everyone who would listen, told the local reverend at my church. And finally, it got down to telling my grandmother about it. And she said, you know, that's very interesting. You had that dream because you were actually the last person that your grandfather asked about before he had his heart attack.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, to this day, I'm more than certain he visited me, and I've had multiple dreams like that throughout the years.
Did any of your family or friends accept it as more than just a dream, or has it been mainly you who's just kind of accepted it as being, more than what it was, or more than what others would think it was?
There were a few friends of mine that accepted it for what it was, mm-hmm. but, you know, mainly at the time, you know, being I was a child, any adult with a rational mind was like, oh, no. You know, don't get talking about ghosts
yeah.
and stuff like that. You know, tried to
sure.
kind of brush it off. But, I know.
So you have this experience, and it's you know, kind of, you know, mind-bending to kind of contemplate this whole idea of, did I can communicate with someone who was deceased? As you kind of grew older and that thought kind of simmered with you longer and longer, what did that do for your kind of understanding or interest into the world of ghosts and paranormal beyond your grandfather and the idea of a loved one that came back to give you a message?
So pretty much what it all boiled down to was I would go to the public library a lot as a young teenager, and I would just spend hours and hours in the archives and, you know, in various books, absorbing folklore and different bits of information that I could pick up on about the paranormal and the afterlife and, you know, deceased family members coming back to visit you. And then soon enough, the opportunity came knocking at my door, and I went, I guess you could say, ghost hunting for the very first time, and had a, I guess, another mind-altering experience that definitely paved the way for the rest of my paranormal career, I guess you could say.
What happened?
So where I grew up, a little place called Matthews County, it's actually in Virginia, one of the smallest counties in Virginia. Deep within Matthews, there's a haunted patch of woods called Old House Woods. And this is the ultimate place to go looking for ghosts. It's supposed to be haunted by pirates and British redcoats, witches, headless animals. I mean, you know, take any good Edgar Allan Poe story, mix it with Robert Louis Stevenson, and boom, you've got it. And a friend of mine asked me to go with him ghost hunting one night. I said, you know, buddy, I've never done this before, but I'm completely interested. And he said, well, you know, just keep an open mind. I've got flashlights and audio recorders and stuff like that. You know, I'll show you the ropes. And I was like, okay, all right. No idea what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
But the moment he took me into the woods, you know, we drove through the center of the woods in his vehicle, and I could feel the energy of the place right away. You know, it made my skin crawl almost. It was very electrifying, and it put me on edge. And after a few moments, we got to the end of this dirt road, and we turned around and started coming back out. All of a sudden, he pulled over to the side and encouraged me to get out. And I said, really, you want me to get out in the middle of the woods? You know, what's going on here? Are you trying to kill me? And he, you know, joking with him, of course. And he said, no, he, just trust me. And we got out, and next thing I know, he's sitting in the middle of the road, and he's telling me he's going to attempt astral projection. And I said, okay, I've heard bits and pieces about astral projection, but I'm not fully familiar. He sat there and explained it to me. He said, I'm basically going to try and get my spirit to leave my body so I can go out and interact with the spirits that dwell here within this woods.
Mm-hmm.
If you see anything, I need you to kind of be my lifeline and pull me back to reality. And all I'm thinking is, okay, this is a bad idea. You know, this is how every good horror movie starts. But we sat there probably for about 10, 15 minutes. I remember the moon was coming down above us. The wind was blowing through the pine trees, which, you know, would smack up against each other. That sound in itself, it was quite terrifying. And all of a sudden, I see what looks like somebody moving through the woods. And I can even hear the foliage being pushed around and whatnot. And my eyes adjust as best as they possibly can. And I can see physical arms grabbing branches, pushing them to the side. And right then my heart started thumping because I had no idea what was going on, but I could clearly see somebody coming through the woods toward us. And a few seconds later, whoever it was came out, but they weren't in a physical form. What came out of the woods was this, the best way I can put it is it's like a black cloud of vapor.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of came out of the woods and settled on the road just several feet away from where me and my friend were. And I stood there transfixed watching this. And a few seconds later, it kind of transformed, and there was a very distinct shadowy figure of a man standing there in its place. And I could easily see a tricorn hat in the outline of what looked like a long flowing overcoat. And he kind of had his arms out like, you know, he was preparing to get into a duel or something. And the very distinct impression I got was, it's time to go. I yelled at my friend and I said, Charlie, wake up, come on, we've got company. And I ran for the car. And he woke up and he said, "Oh man, let's go, let's go. I don't know what that is." We took off to the car. I jumped in first and I hopped in the back seat and I looked out the back window, and here he comes, my buddy Charlie, and all of a sudden I see hands grab him by the shoulder and throw him against the back of the car. And a struggle ensues. He's screaming, begging for me to get out and defend him. And I'm like, man, I have no idea what's going on here. you know, come on, let's go. I can't do this. And I see him throw a punch. And then he jumps in the car completely out of breath. His shirt's pretty much been ripped off of his body. And he starts up the car and we drive away. The last thing I did, and that I can clearly recall, was I turned around and I looked out the back windshield of the car, and the shadowy figure of a man in the tricorn hat and the long plaid overcoat, he was chasing after the car, and he was actually keeping up with it, which just totally blew my mind. But he was more visible now, and you could actually see more details. You could tell he was essentially dressed like a pirate, for the most part. By the looks of it, I was guessing probably 17th century. Clothes were very raggedy, worn-looking. I could see a necklace around his neck and everything. And he was illuminated by the light of the moon. After, I guess, a good minute or so, he finally gave up and stopped chasing us. And that's when I saw six more men dressed very similarly to him show up standing all around him.
Do you believe, or let's just talk about how this occurred. Do you think your friend essentially conjured up this experience to happen through him attempting astral projection to begin with?
You know, I've actually pondered that quite a bit over the years, because you know, for something like that to take place, I mean, you know, unless you have an entity that was just waiting, you know, in the shadows for, you know, a couple of schmucks to come along who had this stored up energy, I mean, what else could there be?
Yeah.
You know, I'm more inclined to go with, you know, he was doing something and didn't understand the full repercussions of what could happen.
Yeah.
And conjured this up himself.
Almost like giving energy or a lifeline to something to manifest. If you guys had just been sitting there drinking some beers and talking, do you think the same experience would have happened?
You know, I honestly can't say it would.
Yeah.
Because it would probably be a different story.
Yeah.
For sure. We'd be telling a different story right now.
Now,
you know, I can say that I have spent the night in that woods, because after that I did go back and I went looking for answers, and I brought a group of six people with me. We obtained permission to spend the night in the woods, and I remember we had dinner late that evening. We had a big pot of stew. We were sitting around the fire, and you know, we hadn't seen anything or heard anything the entire time we were there. We stayed up incredibly late talking and eating and whatnot. And I remember as I got into my tent, I was lying down. I was looking out into the woods and I saw what looked like seven people walking toward the camp. Mm-hmm. They're far off at a distance. But they were, again, much like these pirates, they were illuminated by the light of the moon. They were blue from head to toe. I could see six rather tall, what looked like possibly adult males, and then a child walking in front of them. Not too long after that, I fell asleep and didn't really think anything else of it. The following morning, I woke up and I was the first one out, you know, into the camp, and my buddies one by one started getting up, and I realized that our pot of stew that we had left out had been toppled over, and the ladle was on the other side of the camp. You know, and I went looking in the pot was empty, and I thought, oh great, you know, animals must have come in and, you know, helped themselves to our food. All right. Not a big deal. My buddy, Tenzin, he was visiting from Nepal. he came out and he said, "You know, I had the strangest dream last night, and I honestly can't say I have an explanation." And I said, "Okay, well, tell me what happened." He said, "So I awoke to what sounded like somebody raiding our camp. I climbed out of my tent, I went out, and I looked, and there were six grown men dressed like pirates sitting around our campfire with a little girl in a similar, like, old-timey type outfit, and they were eating our stew. And I was flabbergasted. I yelled at them. I said, 'Hey, I don't know who you are, but that's ours. Buzz off.' Next thing you know, this little girl took the ladle and threw it at me, and she laughed maniacally, and I could see right through her." He said right after that, it scared him so much it sprang him away. But we kind of looked at each other and we're like, "Okay, wait a second." And he and I put two and two together and said, "Okay, so obviously this happened, and we weren't really expecting it to happen." Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I was falling asleep. I saw them coming to the camp, and then you had the dream that was obviously more than just a dream.
Yeah. How... Let me ask you this, because there's a lot of questions I have here and a lot to unpack with that whole thing. Going back to your first experience there in the woods with seeing those figures coming out, and between that and you deciding to get a group together to go stay in the woods, how are you processing that? I mean, that's a lot to take in, seeing all those figures, being able to make out their clothing and almost kind of place them at a certain place in time. I mean, are you questioning yourself at any point? Are you going, "Am I okay?" I mean, your friend obviously had experiences there too, so you weren't alone. That kind of, you know, puts more, you know, validity to it, to one, when you have an experience like that, when someone else has it with you. But how are you processing it after that first encounter?
Well, you know, it's funny, because I've had a lot of people tell me over the years that, you know, obviously I must be crazy doing what I do, you know. And the fact that I went back after that first experience in Old House Woods, that right there solidifies my insanity, so to speak. But I question myself quite a bit through and through, you know. And I contemplated, okay, did me and, you know, in this atmosphere, you know, create some kind of hysteria of sorts, where my friend and I together, you know, possibly put this out into the atmosphere? And, you know, at the end of the night, I kind of ruled it out, and I knew, you know, because my intuition was telling me that there was something more to this place than meets the eye, and that I needed to go back and try to find some kind of answers for those questions that I now had.
And having those questions, what did you find? Obviously, you had these experiences there when you went into the woods. Your friend had this dream. Was your friend aware of your experiences? Did you give them any context as to why we're all going out into the woods tonight for this sleepover in this kind of creepy, weird environment?
So they all knew of my experience.
Okay.
I didn't want to leave them completely hanging, in the dark about it. I wanted them to at least know this is what happened to me, and I'm bringing all of you here to spend the night with me, just in the off chance something happens. You know, that way I have multiple points of view on whatever takes place. They were surprisingly okay with it. I do recall we did lose one guy. I think it was like 5 o'clock in the morning, because he just, I guess nerves must have gotten the better of him in the end, but he said that he needed to take off, that he couldn't deal with it. So we respected that and let him move on. But the woods has always been a bit of a interesting place
It sounds like it. And you obviously are someone who likes to do their research and try to find answers to these situations. What did you find out beyond obviously having those experiences back in the woods as far as just the history of that setting in itself?
So it's actually quite interesting. Growing up with all the different folklore, we do know that pirates, for example, were actually in that area and used Old House Woods as cover. When I was growing up, we had there was this one story about Blackbeard the pirate, you know, the infamous Edward Teach, who came up to Virginia. He had accidentally got blown off course and sailed up White's Creek, which runs along the edge of the woods. And he came on shore with about a dozen or so of his crew, and they buried treasure, and then he killed them all and buried them in the hole with the treasure. That way their souls would protect it for all eternity. And he, of course, got killed off at Ocracoke, North Carolina, and never made it back to retrieve that treasure. Interesting thing is we did find out, me and a couple of friends who dug into the history more, that actually never happened at all. Blackbeard never stepped foot in Virginia at all whatsoever. But we did actually discover that Captain William Kidd did. He and some of his men actually, we can pinpoint to that exact location now. I've actually just started kind of revisiting that old stomping ground of mine. I just went and did an investigation there for the first time in 10 years. I've been avoiding the place, despite how much it calls out to me. But we're going to start doing some serious spirit box sessions and things of that nature to see if we can start getting some names. That way we can go back and look at the history, particularly with Captain Kidd's crew, and see if we can make any kind of connection.
You said you're avoiding the place. Why is that?
So I had a Reiki healing done back. This was a few years back. And the lady who did it for me, she was an empath. And she gave me an empathic reading, and she told me that I had a truly deep connection to a certain patch of woods that was haunted, and she wanted me to know that my soul was tainted because of that location, which was very deep for me. And I asked her what she meant, and she said, "Well, I don't want to scare you, but your soul has been tainted by demonic energy from that woods." And I said, "Is it still there?" And she said, "Not from what I can tell, but you encountered something and it left its mark on you." So that right there kind of, you know, made me take a major step back, and I just started to kind of slowly but surely avoid the place, even though, you know, people would still contact me and ask me about different bits of historical research and things that I'd done, you know, and I was always more than happy to help out. I never agreed to physically step foot into the woods again. But I changed that actually about a month ago.
What did it feel like going back? I mean, after having this piece of knowledge now that you did not have, and when someone tells you something like that, especially when you get the words demonic thrown into the mix of things, that causes one to pause a little bit, because it goes beyond, you know, I guess what one may consider more of a safe type spirit, one of a grandfather, for example, something like that. You know, you do tend to pause. So when you went back after having that information, how did you handle it? How did you process it?
Well, first thing I did was kind of prep myself. I've been doing a lot of grounding and meditation work recently. I've been working with some friends who have been teaching me about crystals and things of that nature that, you know, I can use whenever I go to any particular place that might even be remotely haunted. That way, nothing attaches itself to me or, you know, affects me mentally, physically, or emotionally at all whatsoever. And by doing that, I've kind of given myself the confidence to be able to step back into Old House Woods and not really worry about anything potentially, you know, trying to taint my soul any further than what's already been done. Because that the healer who did that, she said that if darkness ever grabbed my soul again, then I would take a turn for the worse. And, you know, I'll never forget that probably as long as I live. So, you know, I always make sure, you know, whether it's Old House Woods or, you know, Waverly Hills Sanatorium, any of these places that I trek into, I always make sure to protect myself. And I encourage any entities that I encounter to not follow me and stay wherever it is that they're staying.
And that's interesting. I mean, of course, it's one of those things, and the verbiage that we use, you encourage them to not attach themselves to you. But at some point, is that merely a suggestion to them? I mean, because at the end of the day, if things have kind of free will and you can do all the protection that you want, and that's great, and it probably does a great deal to protect you. But is there ever essentially, you know, the invincibility Mario star that you can get where you're not going to be touched by anything? Are you inherently taking a risk no matter what when you go into these places with the protection on top of everything that something could take grasp of your soul, as the Reiki healer told you, and make you take a turn for the worst?
Honestly, you know, you can do whatever you want in terms of protection, you know, but kind of like you said, you know, it's really just a suggestion. I'm all about the power of intent. You know, it's not what you say, but it's how you say it.
Yeah.
And I find that some spirits will respect you on that count and go, okay, no problem, you know. And like, I've actually had some ask me to come back the next day after work, which, you know, kind of blew me away. I'm like, oh, you want me to come back after work? Okay, perfect.
How convenient.
Yeah.
And considerate.
Had to hold up that bargain. Yeah. But, you know, then there are those who disregard that, you know, and there's like, okay, well, you're telling me not to attach myself, but what if I just hitch a ride and don't take any of your energy or make you feel ill or anything like that? And then they'll follow me home and end up in my home for however long, you know, they decide to stay until I realize they're there and have to ask them to vacate.
Yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of, you know, possibilities there that I'm sure run through your mind when going through having those sort of experiences. Let's move on from the woods. That's a very, very intriguing story. Thank you for sharing that. Tell me more about as you continue to dig into this world of paranormal and begin to investigate things beyond just, you know, from initial experiences that drew you in. What were some of the areas, or give me one or two areas that you really wanted to go and dig into deeper after that experience?
So I, you know, slowly but surely became intrigued about life after death in general. You know, what's beyond this life, and prompts one to come back as a ghost? Because, you know, if we go with what Christianity teaches us, you know, when one dies, we go to heaven, we go to hell, that's the end of the story, so to speak, unless you want to get into reincarnation and all that.
Sure.
But I needed to know, you know, what all is there? And, you know, I've had this conversation with different spirits throughout my endeavors in the paranormal field, and, you know, and I've gotten various answers. And, you know, some of them have told me, oh, there's music and light. I'm with friends. I'm with family. Some have told me there's nothing, you know, it's dark, it's miserable, and they're alone. So that kind of, you know, it keeps me going, I guess you could say, at the end of the day. And I keep pushing forward, looking for more and more. And I'm always, you know, when it comes to hauntings, it's like I have to look at history to kind of put me on the path that I feel like I should be on. Because if we don't learn from the mistakes of the past, we're obviously doomed to repeat it, you know, mm-hmm. as the old adage goes.
Sure. And as you dug into that mindset and just that whole, you know, essentially mantra of how you're going to take a look at these things, where did that take you physically in terms of investigating locations?
Well, I eventually became drawn to a place called Williamsburg, Virginia, which is full of history to the brim. And I actually kind of discovered that it was the perfect place to go looking for answers to all my paranormal questions. Because, I mean, we're talking about a city that was initially formed in 1638. When a group of colonists broke off from Jamestown fort to look for better protection against the Native Americans. And then the city itself ended up getting officially created in 1699. And boy, oh boy, oh boy, little did I know that would kind of open up a lot of doors and eventually actually take me into being a ghost tour guide for the city and working for the Colonial Williamsburg Foundation and kind of getting to know all the history and getting very intimate with some of these, you know, original 18th century houses that they have there on the property and getting to know the ghosts mm-hmm. who live there as well.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with DC in part two, what drew him to learn more about the Peyton Randolph House in Williamsburg? What's the story on the more than 37 deaths at the Peyton Randolph House? And when a spirit seems to be stuck, do we have a responsibility to help them cross over? All of that and more in part two of our conversation. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.